Crossfire. Okay, it's May 25th, and this is the Irrelevant Rock and Rolling Music Show, and I'm Jay Hoskins. We got lots of music to get to today, so let's get on with the show.
Hi, I'm Crafty, and it's time for Crossfire.
Yep, and tonight what we're looking at, Crafty, what are the two bands we're going to take on to the firing range tonight?
The Goats and...
The Kooks.
The Kooks and...
The Kooks and the Mountain Goats.
The Mountain Goats. It's the Mountain Goats. I like a band that calls themselves the Mountain Goats.
That's it's good.
All right, let's rock on.
Okay, good. Okay. Okay, let's talk about the Kooks. Okay, the Kooks. You know, I like their first album. This is their second album, and I like it even better. They're part of that new sort of regime that I have called the New Kinks. Very British, very lyrical, and very happy for the most part, unless they're actually complaining about something. Bands that sort of fit that sort of same mode, the Kaiser Chiefs, Kazaban, the Arctic Monkeys. Definitely that British sensibility. This is just a really good album. It's a really, really good album. It's a good album from the beginning all the way to the end. See the Sun is a great song, quirky and smart lyrics. It's got this great ascending guitar. It comes out of your left speaker. It's like it's a really stereo album. It's really split up that way. They really open up on that song, Do You Wanna? It sounds like the song's been jet propelled. And it's just a really, really nice album. Everyone plays their roles well. There's inventive arrangements, nice harmonies, nice dynamics. What's not to like? And there's even a really, You Really Got Me style solo break on Stormy Weather. We don't know whether Jeff Beck went in and did that or not, but it is there on Stormy Weather. So the Kooks. And actually, strangely enough, Conk is the name of the Kinks recording studio. So it's taken that whole idea of the New Kinks idea to the utmost. Rook Pritchard he's a lead singer. He's got a great voice. He writes great songs, and can't say enough about this album. I really like it. Their first album was more Beatle-y and had more of a Beatles sound, but this song definitely is evoking that New Kinks sort of idea. The Kooks, Conk.
I think the first thing you'll notice about this album is, if that's not a real guitar played through a real amp with a real microphone, then boy, they got this digital stuff down. It just sounds real. It sounds like a real rock and roll record. The guitar, like you could almost hear the microphone in the amp. I think it's a great record from the moment we put it on and listen to it straight through. Of course, for me, it's always playing catch up, trying to find the time to listen to it enough to absorb it. But I agree with you. From the moment I put it on, I heard that guitar. I went, okay, that's a microphone on a guitar. That's an amp. That's rock and roll. And the songs are great. The sound is great. And they sound, you're right, happy. It sounds good. It's got upbeat. It's good stuff. This is what more bands should be making. More, I hope they tour and play and we get to see them.
They got great tones. Like the guitars, they're never. Oh, yeah. It's never the same tone per song.
It's a real deal. It's a real deal. In that sense, I can still see the Beatles influences and the Kinks too as well. In the fact that like back in the day, it certainly wasn't a Line 6 pod with a Stevie Ray Vaughan setting or whatever. It was people like getting their sound tones and the mic. And if you've ever recorded a guitar, you'll see how much a mic and the amp and the placement of the mic will just affect it. And you listen to say what you want about the Beatles, and I've said it before that like some of the Beatles songs are just as hard or harder to figure out, or the tones, than Jimi Hendrix, because it was about tone, amp, mic, room sound, and the tunes are there. It's a good band. It's a great band. I like them.
So what is your take on the Mountain Goats?
I guess... It's just, it almost, it's, to me, it was almost ethnic music in its difference for me. Like, there's some Celtic feel there. Some, it didn't jump out at me. I didn't like it as much. I didn't like it that much.
That's it? That's it?
Pretty much, yeah. It just didn't jump out at me. It had its moments. It was, you know, at times it almost reminded me of, what's that band? Very famous Celtic band. Did the big Christmas song.
Oh, the Pogues.
Yeah, the Pogues. There was like, you know, that kind of thing to it, or Spirit of the West kind of feel. And but without the tunes. I didn't feel it. I didn't feel this record at all.
Okay.
And, you know, even those records, I mean, I like the Pogues because they were just like so blatantly the Pogues and Spirit of the West. Well, you know, if you're drunk, that song, that works. And it was great. It's fantastic fiddle playing. It was some stuff there. I guess it's just, you know, it just wasn't my cup of tea. No.
Okay. Well, it's what I call college rock.
That's probably what it is. I never went to college. It's
definitely college rock. The vocalist John Darnell, he's got a voice that's acquired taste. It's sort of like the bands like Death Cab for Cutie and The National. We talked about The National before, and he had a voice that was acquired taste sort of thing too. But there's no denying the craft that went into this record. Every song really is, you know, every song is pretty well built up from the acoustic guitar. That's where it starts, and it goes on from there. There's a nice string backing on San Bernardino. You know, he's not afraid to use different instruments on different songs. I really kind of like that.
The orchestration was nice. I liked it. I agree.
Yeah. There's several real strong songs musically, especially the song Heretic Pride was his thing. And the lyrics, I can't understand any of these lyrics. Some of these lyrics are just so out there. We talked about Tom Villain last week and television. Nothing on John Darnielle for coming up for cryptic lyrics. There's a great hook on the song Lovecraft in Brooklyn. I mean, it's just a great hook. It's the heaviest song on the album. It's got a great guitar hook. It's not a perfect album, but it's not a bad album either. I mean, I listened to this album. I downloaded four or five tracks from it, and I listened to the album, and then I decided I liked it, and decided I wanted to do something on the show about it, and I went out and bought it, and I'm not sorry I bought it. It's got some great song titles. I mean, Lovecraft in Brooklyn, Marduk T-shirt incident. I mean, come on. This, you know, at least the guy's being inventive. At least the guy's pushing himself and not just, you know, doing the same old thing.
I think the college rock did it. Like, I didn't go to college, so I don't like college rock. It's as simple as that. I'm a public school dropout, so.
Yeah, well, college rock to me is, you know.
I know what it is.
Yeah, stuff
I've been to the Horseshoe on a Tuesday night. I don't get it.
Okay.
You know. Like,
but I think people should get, definitely, if they get a chance, they see it in the US Record Bin or something like that, definitely should give it a chance.
I don't think it's on par with the Kooks, though.
No, I think the Kooks have more of a sense of what they wanted to do, and it's more a unified
album.
It's more
original. I found that what's the band, the Goat something?
The Mountain Goats.
The Mountain Goats. I mean, the name alone is pretentious enough, and the rest of the music to me just was like, that's. I found it kind of pretentious. I just found it like insincere almost.
I don't think you liked the voice either.
What's that?
I don't think you liked the voice either. That's what you first told me about it.
I just didn't dig it. It just wasn't my sound. Like, college rock's not my sound. As soon as you sell it college rock, you're pretty much out of me. You know, I'm a high school, junior high school dropout, so how could I relate to college rock educated enough? College rock, it's like indie rock. What the heck does that mean? What does that mean? It means music I don't like.
Or a music you don't get.
Or like, if I don't like it, I don't get it. If I don't get it, I don't like it. Same thing.
Okay, enough said about that.
You're listening to Radio 2069, Rock and Beyond. Osana fili olami medeni dulus vi beni din omine omine.
Now it's time for that part of the show that we really like and love to do, which is albums that deserve to be played again, albums that we think you should know about because we love them so much. And tonight, Crafty has a great classic from the land of the frozen north.
Absolutely. This is as good as it gets. Black Noise by FM. For the moments, starting moments of the electrified mandolin to of phases on Stun right to the end, there is not 1 second. This is one of those not one wasted second albums. I believe it was produced by the CBC, of all things, if I can remember correctly. And they never repeated it. Martin Dubar comes into Long McQuaid's from time to time. And Nash the Slash is still gigging.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I like to bring that out. We talk about the fact of like albums disappearing and vinyl disappearing and stuff like that. One of the things is the drawbacks, and one of the things that we have when we come sometimes get to an album deserves to be played again is there's no liner notes. Half the liner notes are gone, you know, things that actually told you about this kind of stuff. And usually sometimes you can go to Wikipedia and find a lot of stuff out, but sometimes you just can't.
Oh.
And Cameron Hawkins is the keyboard player. He was the I think the voice and
the voice. Yeah, it's a great band. If you're a fan of Emerson, Lake & Palmer, King Crimson, any of the prog rock bands, these guys held their own. I've heard, you know, people say, like actually KB would say that, oh, like they sound like at the time they sound like a lot like Zahn. Zahn never sounded as good as FM.
I saw Zahn live, and I can attest to that.
No, there's no way. And like Saga didn't sound as good as FM. I saw Saga and an FM on a bill. It's a funny thing, because my ex and I, Susie, went there, and we knew we were in trouble when we saw her older sister and their boyfriends there. And we says, okay, we're in the wrong place. But FM still sounded good. Saga not so much. Saga lost their edge when they lost the original keyboard player, who went on as a Moog, selling Moogs at the time. But he was the John Lennon. And once they lost him, they got some guy that played like a Rick Wakeman setup. And the first album, that's another band we'll talk about. But FM, that album stands the test of time. It's as good as, if you like synths and prog rock and great drumming. Instead of electric guitar, you've got this, you know, Nash the Slash playing wicked mandolin and violin, and Cameron Hawkins doing great vocal sound, great songs, great instrumentals, fantastic album, FM Black Noise.
Okay, you should track it down, because you can see it a lot of times in used record stores and stuff. It does pop up.
If you're a prog rock fan and you don't have FM, then you don't have it all.
Here's Retro Retrospective. Or I've got $100 in my pocket.
Okay, it's time for Retro Perspective. And tonight we have a Canadian icon we're looking at, a Canadian blues icon that Crafty's going to tell us about. And all his music is available, and you can get it, and especially the ones Crafty's going to talk to you about. And they're really worth seeking out. So here is Crafty with his Retro Perspective of Jerome Gabo.
Oh, yeah. And I tell you, you're not lived to have seen this guy live. I don't know what you want to say. It's either a combination of a cat that, you know, can sound like James Cotton, who's a harp player, Jimi Hendrix, who's a guitar player, and he's still a harp player, conjure up images of Jim Morrison, and just make sure you had a good time. The guy is like so hot on stage and like such a sweet guy. When he hosts a jam, like you can't find anyone cooler. This is one of the coolest guys around. The first broke the market, I guess, with his band, The Phantoms, come from Ottawa. And when these guys came out, like they were all young punks. It was almost punk blues. And I think off the first album, there's a song called Tonight I Bleed Again, which is a good as blues song ever written by anyone. And I don't care. You can say Willie Dixon. You can say anyone at top. It's this song. It was such, and his voice is through the roof. The Phantoms kicked around for a while, kind of disbanded, and Jerome's been on his own ever since. Well, on his own with a lot of really cool people.
Yeah. to the bottom. Throw my body in the sea. Send me to the bottom. I'm alive. Let me go.
If you can track it down and find Live at the Grossman's album, I'm not even sure it's available on CD. It's probably just available on cassettes from friends.
I think it might be available on his website.
Because to me, that's like listening to B.B. King live, the revolutionary B.B. King album. It's just... Oh, they like just these guys are so smoking. You just sit there and your jaw drops. I've never seen Jerome on stage when I just didn't go, holy shit, this is the deal. And as I said, the guy's the sweetest guy. And if he was from anywhere else, this is a classic example of the David Wilcox syndrome. Like if David Wilcox was from Nashville, Tennessee, you know, there'd be no George Thorogood. David Wilcox would be, you know, one of the hugest guitar players, because he's another one who, like, and David, you know, was one of the most prolific songwriters. He's actually a white Willie Dixon, because it's hard to write a blues song that's original enough to be original and bluesy enough to still be blues. And Jerome's would come up against this many, many times. On the album One Monkey, I think when he had Jeff White on bass and the original drummer from the Phantoms on guitar, of all things, I believe he was on guitar, but they were co-writing, and they probably got their most original stuff, which also made them stray out of the standard blues stuff, including a cover of Alice Cooper's Is It My Body, but it's a great cover. The album off, the song off that, it's all good. This is a classic album that should have broken big. There's no reason this shouldn't have broke big. I mean, there's more original songs in that album than, I'm sorry, anything that Stevie Ray Vaughan ever did. You know, I mean, Stevie Ray Vaughan's a great blues guitar player, but you know, if you listen to the body of writing, It's not there, you know, like it's not like this. This album stands it, and I guess the problem was that it broke a bit of the, you know, say blues society accepted genre.
It's very funky.
It is funky, And I used to really fight against like the Blues Society when I was a younger guitar player myself, because they always, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And until I was the Pope said, if I weaken Catholicism, it would no longer be Catholicism. So for that, I agreed to the Blues Societies around the world that you must keep it, you know, traditional to a certain degree.
I think we should play One Monkey. I think we should let people hear exactly what that funky style is.
So let's fire it up.
So let's fire it up. Here's One Monkey by Jerome Gabo.
Show.
and we're back, and that was One Monkey, and just one of the great songs that we're covering in the album A Retro Perspective of Jerome Gabo. And you can get that album that that song came off of, One Monkey, on his website at jeromegabo.com.
And if you like that, you're going to love like Communication, Guardian Angel. They're all there. Great, great too. That's, I think, the strongest songwriting. But it brings me up to his new album, which I think, and is probably his most traditional blues sound album. It's Jerome pretty much on his own by the sounds of the writing. Very, 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 very traditional in the sense of the blues.
Before that, there is some good blues songs on the Pain and the Glory. I mean, I know you don't really like the sound that much, but the songs.
About that album that was
but the songs
me.
Are nice.
Susie McNeil sings on that album.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like, it's like I don't know. It was so like she comes out of nowhere on the mix, and I listen to it, and I just don't feel it. I love Jerome. And the harp playing, if you like harmonica, this guy is smoking. Like, there are harp players, and there are harp players. Jerome is on the league of James Cotton and any of them. Well, Little Walter, he is on that level. And anyone who doesn't think so is just out of their mind, because he's got the tone, the originality, and the spirit and the passion. He's as good as it gets. And there's other guys that are, you know, sort of coming ahead of him lately, some up-and-comers and stuff like that. But to me, this guy, I cannot say enough about it. So with the new album, Humdinger, I'm sorry to switch over to Pain and Glory. That album just didn't wake me up, you know. I would tell people to search out the Live at the Grossman's first, the Phantom's first album even, and, of course, One Monkey. But when I put this on, it was like, it's like, this is, I think, his most traditional blues album. It's like he said, it's almost like he said, well, by the looks of it, he wrote most of the songs himself. And it's like he's gone back and says, you know, this is what's kept me through things. This is what's done it for me. And, you know, to a lot of people, you can hear a lot of, you know, traditional and you might say cliche blues kind of arrangements. But it soaks alive. I bet you go see this live, you'll dig it, because time that he did it. He there's not like all of his albums. I mean, I've seen him do blues rap. You know, he's done it. He, in the middle of the, you know, like he'd rap on blues tunes. So for him to come out and do this, it's an album that had to be made. It's called Humdinger. It's full of, you know, more traditional blues songs, original ones, built around traditional blues arrangements.
Well, I think that the fourth song, which we're going to play, Eyes on You, that's as good as anything that Muddy Waters ever wrote as a blues song. I mean, Muddy Waters has his own performance and style and everything
Muddy
like that.
Didn't write a lot of his songs.
Didn't write a lot of his songs.
A lot of them were written by Willie Dixon.
Okay. All right. So shows you how much I know about blues.
That's all right. All right. You did a blues special.
Anyway, but it's got that classic blues sound to it.
Oh, yeah.
It's
yeah,
a
whole
great,
album does.
Great song. Wrote a great song. And the song, I just remember song 6, actually. I don't know the title. If you want to read the title off there, it's sitting there right in front of you. Great Slows Blues song. Great guitar work on the
Wounded Healer.
Wounded Healer. It's interesting. It's called that because it does sound like it's the guitar sounds wounded. It sounds like it's in pain. And
like Beans, it starts off, it's like a swing track. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if you're more traditional blues oriented, you're going to love this album, Humdinger. And I'm sure when he mixes it up, and I'd love to be the one to do a compilation of his stuff. Jerome, if you're ever listening to this, let me be the one to do the compilation. Please. Because I think I've seen it all, like from the first time the Phantoms ever came to Toronto to the last time I was up at Grossman's seeing him on a Tuesday night. And I mean, lots of Jerome fans, but being a songwriter myself, I would love to do the compilation. If anyone deserves this, like, I mean, this guy, how he doesn't have a Juno Award, how he does not have even a Canadian, like, this gave Alanis Miles a Lifetime Achievement Award. This guy deserves it first. I'm sorry. He's been doing it longer and better. Jerome Gabo.
Jerome Gabo. And hold on, Crafty. Like, we're gonna play a song off Humdinger.
Okay.
And would you like? Would you like? You eyes on you, or you would you like Wounded Healer?
You pick it.
Okay, I think we're gonna go with. I think we'll go with Wounded Healer.
Okay.
Okay, this is Wounded Healer. This is off Humdinger, the new album by Jerome Gabo, and which is available at jeromegabo.com. And definitely go out and check it out. And check out, what are the albums again? The Phantoms album?
The first Phantoms album with, yep.
Yeah, the One Monkey.
Mm-hmm.
The Live at Grossman's, if you can find it.
If you can find it.
If you can find it, it says Jerome Gabo Live at Grossman's. Pay whatever you have to get it out of the store.
It says that?
No, well, I'm saying that.
Good album title there, Jerome. It's quite good.
And Humdinger, which is the song we're going to play from, is going to be Wounded Healer. You know.
My pain is hid from view. Oh yeah, yeah. I cry, yes I cry, 'cause it hurts me when you say I'm too much for you. Yeah. will stay. Oh yeah. I need, yes, I need some understanding, yeah. Be my friend.
Time now for Find of the Week.
Okay, it's Find of the Week, and it's my Find of the Week, but Crafty's going to give us a little background on it.
I got to see this band, God knows how long ago, but Ontario Place was still in the round, and Lighthouse had all its original members, so you know it was a long time ago. And if my memory serves me right, they were on tour of Japan. And I guess these guys might have been their openers or whatever. And they brought them over to Canada. And like, considering that Lighthouse is a big horn band, you know, like Blood, Sweat, and Tears, horn funk band, whatever you want to call them, these guys come out with their Marshall Stacks, jet black long hair, and they're all Japanese, and they sing in English, and they sound kind of like, well, I guess... I think John's right, or Jay Hawkins is right, that there is a Black Sabbath overtones there. And the name of the band is?
Flower Traveling Band.
The Flower Traveling Band.
The Flower Traveling Band. And the album is, it's just called The Flower Traveling Band. And it is a find of the week for me. I was over at my friend Bill, who's a lawyer, but in his hippie years, he was into a lot of different eclectic music and a huge supporter of Canadian bands like White House and Crowbar and stuff. I think Crowbar was his favorite band of all time.
Good band live.
Yeah, very good band live. And Kelly J and their album Bad Manners. That was something. Hey, that's an album that deserves to be played again.
Well,
get to that one. I was over getting some for Crafty. I was actually over getting you the Ginger Baker Air Force stuff that I gave you. And I've seen this album in his collection before, but it's never really sparked interest in me. But I've been reading about Loudness and stuff, which is a Japanese heavy metal band from Japan. And then I saw
where
this.
Where else would a Japanese heavy metal band be from? Tijuana.
Okay, I mean, that was a bit redundant.
See, redundant rock and roll music show.
Anyway, I saw this album again, and I just went, I want to check it out. And I took it home, and it was on vinyl, so I copied it to CD. I've been listening to it, and it's really good. It's really, really good. These guys have a real great command of the English language, I'm telling you. I mean, if you didn't know they were Japanese, you wouldn't know, except for some of the different music stylings. Yeah. Definitely. There's one song where it sounds like a really high-pitched sitar. That's what the guitar sounds like.
No, it's an interesting sound.
Yeah, and it's fronted by a guy by the name of Kira Yamakata. And he announces his presence with this huge banshee wail on the song Satori. Satori Part 1. There are three parts of Satori in the album. It's Satori Part 1. And he's got a set of pipes on him. Wow. I mean, we're not talking... This is like back in the 70s. We're not talking like studio sampling, you know, digital recontrolled here. We're talking about that's his voice.
Right.
And... you know, a number of really good songs. They get a bit psychedelic on the second part of Satori Part 2. And they get into like lyrics like "There is no up, there is no down. The master is the only truth." You know, and they sing it all with a real sense of like conviction, and they believe what they're singing about. There's actually some pre-Sepultura drumming, some tribal drumming there, which is really, really kind of interesting. The whole band really contributes to the sound.
And absolutely.
Yeah.
The traditional Japanese music brought into rock. That was their thing.
We're going to play Sa Tora Part 1, so you get a chance to hear what this band sounds like. And it's going to be a pretty interesting ride. So here it is, the Flower Traveling Band. Enjoy.
Been listening to the Irrelevant Rock and Roll and Music Show. I mean, what did you think you were listening to? I mean, really?